Everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the common law right after this. You know, with an income of $50,000, you're paying $7,650 a year in Social Security taxes if you're self-employed. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from your $50,000 income and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying 17% of that $50,000 in total? But you know, the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of the $50,000 in Social Security tax. Then they make you pay 17% of that same $50,000 in income tax. That means that you paid 17% of the $7,650 twice. Now, that's a little bookkeeping trick, and that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from you and from everyone else that pays that tax. Now, what would you think if Sears, Penney's, or your credit card company charged you twice like Social Security and the IRS does? I thought you'd think that was just kind of special. Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. Tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. That's the school, 46 lessons. If you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about this thing of the common law and jurisdiction. How did jurisdiction fit into this? And I pointed out to you that the jurisdiction fits in because you sign up for it. Government's not dumb. Government's pretty smart. You have constitutional rights. The day you were born, you had constitutional rights, and the same day that you were born, your daddy or your mommy in the hospital waived a lot of your civil and constitutional rights by getting you a birth certificate. That was step one, down the slippery slope. Then, as time progressed along, mommy and daddy sent you into the public school system and institutionalized you. After all, your mommy and daddy were incompetent people, and they could not educate you. They could create and produce you, but they could not educate you because mommy and daddy weren't up to the task. And so your government, now with the birth certificate in hand, owns you. And now with your education firmly in the government's control, the government can now control what you think. That's right, the government controls what you think. And that's because they're going to program you. See, your little mind is empty. Doesn't have any information in it. And so your government's going to put in information. So if you've been to public school, you've been programmed. Your government has programmed you to be the perfect socialist man. Well, if you live here in the United States. I can't speak for the rest of the governments in the world. I don't know what they teach in their public schools, but I'm a graduate of public school here, and I know what public schools teach in the United States, and I've studied that subject for quite some time. And so we have taught all of the good little boys and girls of America to be socialists and communists, and it's a political, a religious, and philosophical philosophy, and it has consequences. You know, when you do things, they have consequences. Drive a car 110 miles an hour around a turn that's marked for 40 miles an hour, it's going to have consequences. That's the way life is. So if you drive around that 40-mile-an-hour turn at 40 miles an hour, you'll get one result. And if you drive around that 40-mile-an-hour turn at 110 miles an hour, you'll get a different result. So when you practice communism, you get a different result than when you practice the common law. You practice the Ten Commandments, you're going to get a different result than if you practice the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's the way life is. I didn't make it that way. I'm just reporting to you. That's the way life is. Now, how did government get you people to adhere to accept this admiralty jurisdiction? I mean, you weren't born that way. You were born under the common law. Your constitution is a common law instrument. Your Declaration of Independence came from people who were trained in the common law. They rebelled against King George because he tried to impose upon the colonists in the United States this admiralty, this foreign and alien jurisdiction called admiralty. They said, we're not going to buy into that. We're common law freemen. We've got the rights of Englishmen. We come from England. We have Runnymede. We have, we have rights. You know, we're descended from God, and we have the Ten Commandments, and we have property rights, and we have thou shalt not steal. It was a wild new concept. Now, some Americans today are disgruntled. And I get calls in here every day from disgruntled Americans who live in various people's republics around the United States of America. They get kind of upset about that. And so when I tell them, well, you volunteered for this, and they'll complain to me, and they'll say, well, I didn't know. I didn't know. I didn't know. As if ignorance makes things right. Gosh, I didn't know that my car would fly off of the road and fly down into the canyon if I went around that turn at 110. After all, the guy that sold it to me told me that it would go 160 miles an hour because it was a Porsche. He didn't tell me that I had to slow it down from 160 to 40 when I came around certain turns that were marked 40, 50, 60. He didn't tell me that. I know I get products in here all the time that tell you how to use them, you know. Some of the craziest warning signs on products to protect companies from consumer product liability claims. It's because consumers today are so damn dumb they can't figure out the obvious. Do not open the door at high speeds. Oh, gosh, when you're driving at 100 miles an hour, you shouldn't open the door. Oh, I didn't know that. I'm glad there's a warning label on the door handle of my new Chevy Blazer that says, do not open while car is in motion. As if we needed to be told that. Well, that's the way Americans are. You know, we've been dumbed down now to such a degree that you have to have these warning labels to protect you. You got buckets over here that say, hey, listen, watch out. You got little kids over here, they'll fall into the buckets. They got warning labels. People are unable to think for themselves. They're unable to protect their own children. You got to have labels that warn them. Well, that's where Admiralty comes in. Admiralty seeks to prevent a damage before it happens. The common law seeks to remedy a damage after it has occurred. They're just opposites, but opposite poles. The common law doesn't even come into opposition or come into the issue, not opposition, but comes into play until a damage has been accomplished. Now, equity seeks to prevent the damage from occurring. That's why you buy insurance. See, you buy insurance to protect you in case you have an accident from your irresponsible behavior, because we presume you're going to be irresponsible. People with insurance are irresponsible people because they don't practice responsibility. Insurance is the exact opposite to responsibility. So the insurance company comes along and says, okay, we've got this incompetent, irresponsible person who's a policyholder, pays us this $500 a year. Now we got to regulate this guy. And so they go to the legislature and they say, listen, this guy's got insurance, prima facie evidence that he's irresponsible, so we got to have a seatbelt law. We got to have a law that requires this guy to buckle himself into the car. He's not smart enough to do that for himself. We got to have a law here that tells this guy to drive 40 miles an hour around this turn. We got to have warning labels on all these products over here because these people are stupid. They're unable to figure this out for themselves. That's why you have this cradle to the grave security blanket wrapped around you. That's why you've got all these people, you know, from OSHA. They come into the factory. Oh my God, you've got to wear eyeglasses. You know, you could get something in your eye. It could cause blindness. That's certainly true. That's certainly true. It could. But there was a time in America when we used to make those decisions for ourselves. You know, we would go to work on a machine. And we'd say, gee, there's sparks flying off this machine. Perhaps I should wear eye protection. We used to think for ourselves. I can remember a time when I was a machinist. I used to work with machinery, and we had to decide for ourselves whether or not we wore glasses. There was no law, rule, or regulation, and certainly there were some people that got their eyes put out and had eye damage because they didn't wear their glasses. But then, you know, that breaks the game. And then slowly but surely, you know, somebody came along and said, these Americans are so damn dumb now. We got to have OSHA. We got to have the Occupational Safety and Health Administration come in. We got to have a federal agency with federal policemen to come in here and tell you what kind of shoes to wear. What kind of eyeglasses to wear and hard hats and stuff like that. And that's because we had workman's compensation comes into place. So we're going to have workman's compensation. We got to have policemen to run around and tell you how to dress and how to conduct yourself on the job. See, when I first started in the workplace over here, you picked up whatever you thought you could pick up. And, of course, young men like to show off. And so I could pick up a 100-pound sack of wheat. In fact, I was a real tough ass, so I could pick up 200-pound sacks of wheat and pack them off. One day I was working at International Harvester and I was picking up truck tires in the shop. And steward came over and said, you stop doing that. Those weigh more than 50 pounds. And the shop rules are you cannot pick up over 50 pounds. You have to get help or you have to have some kind of a mechanical device to aid you. It was in the union contract. So I was in the shop changing truck tires, and these truck tires and wheels weigh more than 50 pounds. In fact, they probably weigh more than 100. I don't know what they weigh. I just picked them up and wheeled them off and carried them around, did whatever I needed to do in order to accomplish my job. And well, shop steward sure tuned me up in short order. Said, we'll fire you. We'll throw you off the job, or we're not going to let you do that. So that slows down productivity. It slows down production. It's called feather bedding, you know, in some places. But we used to decide, you know, I mean, the weaker guys couldn't pick up that much. Stronger guys could pick up more. So we decided for ourselves what we could and couldn't do. Of course, some people tried to pick up too much and strained their backs and got in trouble. Well, when they didn't have insurance, it wasn't a problem. But as soon as workman's compensation came in, well, then it became a problem. So Admiralty then has moved inland. Admiralty moved away from the high tide mark. Admiralty, which used to operate on ships on the high seas, has now moved inland, and it operates everywhere in America. Everywhere that insurance works, Admiralty works. You want insurance? You get Admiralty at no extra cost to you whatsoever. Like it or lump it. Where you have insurance, boys and girls, you have Admiralty. Where you have insurance, you do not have the common law. You can't. They're mutually in opposition to one another. It's a choice that you make. You can have one or the other, but you can't have both. You can have virginity or you can have sex, but you cannot be a virgin whore. Now, Congress has the power to regulate interstate commerce, and commerce is intercourse. One of its most ordinary ingredients is called traffic. And in fact, in the Bible, they're called Canaanite traffickers. Canaanite traffickers, strictly prohibited. Commerce is prohibited in the scripture. Commerce is the opposite to property and property rights. Now, you can have commerce, or you can have property, but you can't have both. Now, under Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution, Congress wrote in the Commerce Clause, right into our federal Constitution. And they weren't ignorant. Those old boys, they knew exactly what they were doing. They put a Commerce Clause in there for people that wanted to deal in trade, commerce, business, and industry. And if you want to deal in commerce, you know, it's your choice. You want to get a driver's license, a marriage license, a birth certificate? Hey, it's there. It's commerce. It's there for you. You want to join the Army? Get after it. But don't complain about the regulations that follow it. That's the point. You want to work for corporate America? Don't complain about lifting 50 pounds, wearing eyeglasses, and having somebody tell you when to get up, when to go to bed, and what to do in between. Quit complaining about somebody else dictating to me about how I live my life. It's the choice that you made. You made the choice to select limited liability over strict liability, which is individual responsibility. Well, in 1815, get this, although commerce includes traffic in this narrower sense, for more than a century it has been judicially recognized that in a broad sense it embraces every phase of commercial and business activity and intercourse. Jordan versus V.K. Tirisho, 278 U.S. 123. In a broad sense, it embraces every phase of commercial and business activity and intercourse. In 1815, in the case of Delovio v. Boyd, written by Justice Story, the Supreme Court ruled this way. He said, quote, "The Admiralty from the highest antiquity has exercised a very extensive criminal jurisdiction and punished offenses by fine and imprisonment. The celebrated Inquisition at Queensborough in the reign of Edward III would alone be decisive, and even at common law it had been adjudged that the Admiralty might fine for contempt. Appeal, and not a writ of error, lies from its decrees." So when you go into court today, you appeal. You don't file a writ of error. Appeal. That tells you exactly what kind of court you're in. For those of you out there, you know they're talking about your common law rights. "Yet it is conceded on all sides that the maritime hypothecations, the Admiralty has jurisdiction. The jurisdiction of the Admiralty depends, or ought to depend, as to contracts upon the subject matter. For example, whether maritime or not, and as to torts upon locality. Neither the Judicial Act nor the Constitution, which it follows, limit the Admiralty jurisdiction of the District Court in any respect to place. It is bounded only by the nature of the cause over which it is to decide. Subject matter. On the whole, I am without the slightest hesitation ready to pronounce that the delegation of cognizance of all civil cases of Admiralty and maritime jurisdiction to the courts of the United States comprehends all maritime contracts, torts, and injuries. The latter branch is necessarily bounded by locality. The former extends over all contracts, wheresoever they may be made or executed, or whatsoever may be the form of the stipulations which relate to the navigation, business, or commerce of the sea." Now, I'm going to pause here and make a little observation. See, let's take a ship container made in China, ships across the ocean, unloads in New York City. Admiralty applies to the dock workers. Admiralty applies to the crane operators. Now, there's a contract involved in the delivery of these goods, which now extends to the railroad and the locomotive engineer and all the people that are attendant to it. Now, this thing goes across the country and ends up at Walmart in Wichita, Kansas, which now affects trade, commerce, business, and industry, affecting the public interest. This is commerce. Truck drivers. And then you say, well, I'm just a crummy clerk working in Walmart. You come under the Maritime Admiralty jurisdiction. After all, Walmart is a commercial operation. It comes under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. They do this in gun cases. Anytime that a gun case comes up in federal district court, they want to know about the Commerce Clause. Well, this gun was made in Connecticut and sold in Utah, so therefore it's in commerce. And so we picked you up with the gun, so therefore it's an illegal gun, so therefore you're subject to the penalty. And that's just where reality's at, boys and girls. That's how extensive this admiralty is. It moves inland from the oceans under contract, pursuant to insurance, maritime underwriting. So the next inquiry is, what are properly to be deemed maritime contracts? Well, happily, in this particular, there is little room for controversy. All civilians and all jurists agree that in this appellation are included, among other things, maritime hypothecations. And what is more material to our present purpose, policies of insurance. Policies of insurance. Hell, man, this comes from 1815, boys and girls. Delovio v. Boynt. We're not talking about Bill Clinton. We're not talking about Jimmy Carter or Richard Nixon impairing our rights over the last 50 years. Boys and girls, hell, this goes back to practically the beginning of the country. And the judge goes on to say, my judgment accordingly is that policies of insurance are within, though not exclusively within, the admiralty and maritime jurisdiction of the United States. Anytime insurance is involved, you're an admiralty. You want to drive an automobile, you got to have insurance. Well, if you want to drive an automobile with license, insurance, and the registration, all this. Now, the United States Supreme Court has ruled that no commercial enterprise of any kind which conducts its activities across state lines has been held to be wholly beyond the regulatory power of Congress under the Commerce Clause. We cannot make an exception of the business of insurance, United States versus Southeastern Underwriters Association. In a later case, a federal court stated that the court takes judicial notice that insurance is now interstate commerce under the Commerce Clause of the federal Constitution, and in accordance with the Supreme Court decision in the case of United States versus Southeastern Underwriters. All right, now that's insurance. That's Admiralty moves inland. Let's take a look at transportation. Once upon a time, the jurisdiction of Admiralty stopped at the high tide watermark. However, the Supreme Court of the United States, ruling on a case regarding a collision on Lake Ontario in 1851, said this: and if the Admiralty jurisdiction in matters of contract and tort, which the courts of the United States may lawfully exercise on the high seas, can be extended to the lakes under the power to regulate commerce, it can, with the same propriety and upon the same construction, be extended to contracts and torts on land, when the commerce is between different states, and it may embrace also the vehicles and the persons engaged in carrying it on. So from the time that Chinese container reaches New York City, is loaded on a railroad car, shipped across the country, offloaded onto a truck, and then offloaded at Walmart, and all the people that deal with that contract under insurance, from the time it leaves China to the time that the consumer buys it, is Admiralty maritime jurisdiction, every step of the way. That's the way they moved Admiralty inland. That's why all you Americans out there, Canadians and Australians, that's why all you people are under Admiralty jurisdiction. You're totally divorced now from your common law. And that's because you joined commerce. Now, you don't have to. There's other ways for you to live besides commerce. But government taxes commerce. Government can't tax property. Now, you should understand, you know, as old Dan Rather used to say, you know, follow the money. Government can't tax property, they can tax commerce. So government sends you to public school. What are they going to teach you? Private property rights without taxation or commerce with taxation? Well, government's going to teach you commerce with taxation. The bureaucracy depends upon taxation. Your servants, you know, your public employees can only make their living in their government jobs off of taxes. You know, if all of us Americans practiced the common law, we would have limited government. The only way you can have expansive, all-powerful government is to practice commerce. That's a choice that we made. And now that the choice has been made, 95% of Americans practice commerce, and 5% of Americans practice private business. That's what the bottom line is. Now, I don't know that 5% of us actually practice private business, but it isn't more than that. So it may embrace also the vehicles and the persons engaged in carrying it on. It would be in the power of Congress to confer admiralty jurisdiction upon its courts over the cars engaged in transporting passengers or merchandise from one state to another, and over the persons engaged in conducting them, and to deny to the parties the trial by jury. Now, the judicial power in cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction has never been supposed to extend to contracts made on land and to be executed on land. But if the power of regulating commerce can be made the foundation of jurisdiction in its courts, and a new and extended admiralty jurisdiction beyond its heretofore known and admitted limits, it may be created on water under that authority, and the same reason would justify the same exercise of power on land. Comes from the Propeller Genesee Chief et al. Versus Fitzhaw et al. 12 How 443. I mean, that goes back into the 1830s. We're not talking about something new here, boys and girls. We're just talking about law, as it's always been in the United States. Now, what's happened is, or the change that has occurred, is they sent you to public school and taught you how to get a driver's license, taught you how to get a social security number and to file for insurance, how to get your social security number and file and pay your income tax. Now, you know, there isn't anything that I can think of that I can't do here in private business that you people are doing in public business, and paying a third of everything you create and produce in the process to support this government bureaucracy and all of this big government. You know, I got a wife just like you have, and I've got children just like you have, and I got an automobile just like you have, but I don't have the licenses and the regulations that go along with it. And I got a business just like you have, but I don't have the licenses that go along with it. And of course, I don't have the credit cards, and I don't have the passports and all of the whistles and bells and all of the conveniences that you people have. And I got to admit, you know, that credit cards are kind of neat. And I used to have a bunch of them. And I'll be the first to concede that there's all kinds of neat benefits that you're going to get, that you're going to receive from credit cards and commerce. I mean, after all, that's why they call it the gold card. That's why they're advertising it and promoting it, and that's why it's so appealing to you. But you know, there are side effects that come from it. Now, if you're prepared to take the side effects, kind of like joining the army, you know, the army has some side effects. It's a pretty nasty place, but it's got these benefits. You know, they'll give you all these freebies. And I was listening the other day, and this girl joined the military, and she's really disgusted about the war in Iraq, and she's not happy with her lot in life. And they asked her, why'd you join the army? So I could go to college. She wanted to go to college, and if you join the army, you get to go to college on the GI Bill. Okay, so that's the benefit that you want. One of the side effects are you got to go over to Iraq and get shot at and blown up with bombs alongside the road. That's one of the side effects. You can't have both. You know, you can't stay stateside and get free college. And if you want to get government-paid college, you got to go get shot at. I mean, there isn't a better way than that. Now, this girl would like to join the Army, stay in the States, and get her college without getting shot at, but that isn't the way the game is played. So let's make up our minds that we got to play the game by the rules. Now, it is evident that the court was concerned about this case, because if they ruled that admiralty applied in this case, admiralty would pour out upon the land over the highways, rivers, and car. However, they ruled that it is evident that a definition that would at this day limit public rivers in this country to tidewater rivers is utterly inadmissible. We have thousands of miles of public navigable water, including lakes and rivers in which there is no tide. And certainly there can be no reason for admiralty power over a public tidewater which does not apply with equal force to any other public water used for commercial purposes and foreign trade. The lakes and the waters connecting them are undoubtedly public waters, and we think are within the grant of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction in the Constitution of the United States, cited from the Genesee Chief, page 457. The jurisdiction is there made to depend upon the navigable character of the water and not upon the ebb and flow of the tide. If this water was navigable, it was deemed to be public, and if public, it was regarded as within the legitimate scope of the admiralty jurisdiction conferred by the Constitution, cited again from the Genesee Chief. Now, isn't that just special? Admiralty applies to your automobiles, it applies to your job and your workplace, at McDonald's, at Social Security, nearly everything that you do. There's a commercial and there's a private side to everything that goes on in America. There's private money called gold and silver, and there's public money called Federal Reserve notes. And boys and girls, you got a right to choose. You got a right to choose. I have people come in here to school and they say, well, I have to participate in commerce because that's the way the country runs. And you're probably right. You're probably right. So here's the way you live. You sit on the back of the bus, fold your hands, shut your mouth, go along for the ride and enjoy the view. Everything go along just fine. When the policeman pulls you over, shut your mouth. Just say yes or no, sir, just like a soldier does in the Army. Social lady comes over, knocks on your door, and says, hey, listen, we'd like to inquire as to how you're raising our child. Shut your mouth. All you are is a damn babysitter. Raise the kid the way the state wants him raised. Give the kid the shots that the state wants. I get people in here that say, I don't want to give my kid shots. Excuse me, you got a birth certificate, you gave your child to the state, reduced yourself to a crummy babysitter, and now you're sitting here telling the new adoptive parents that you don't want your kid getting shot up with snake venom and monkey pus. What the hell's the matter with you people out there? You can't join the Army and get your free college without getting shot at. That's a part of the program. Getting shot at is what you signed up for. Now, if it happens that you get sent to North Korea and you don't get shot at, or if it happens that you get sent to North Korea and that's the next hot zone, the next war, you know, that's the breaks of the game. If you don't want to get shot at, don't join the Army. That's a dangerous place. Joining the Army is like painting a bullseye on your chest and say, target. All right, we're at the halfway point. We're going to make a couple of statements, a couple of announcements. You're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week, Monday through Sunday. You know, Monday through Sunday or Sunday through Saturday, however you want to count it. 7 days a week, an hour a day. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to the website, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure. We teach business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and we teach biblical law, and we do it all from a scriptural perspective. So if you're opposed to the Bible and the Ten Commandments, you want to listen to this program. You know, turn on the Beatles or something else. Keep in mind that the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page at the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on subjects of law, science, education, politics, religion, news, current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a 4-hour introductory CD package. So if you'd like to order one, they're free. What you do is just call the law school and order it. 417-273-4967. We need an address and how to mail it to. And one last item over here. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour, please go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call direct 417-273-4967. Talking about the common law this week. Where does it come from? Who thunk it up? What's it all about? Well, it's evident that the court was concerned about the subject matter of admiralty jurisdiction. And clear back in the 1830s, I believe this Genesee chief was decided, back in the last century, they came to the conclusion that a ship dealing in commerce, Article 1, Section 8 commerce, was certainly recognized as an admiralty adventure, comes under admiralty jurisdiction on the salt water coming into New York City. Well, what about the contract and the results of the contract as this stuff moves by barge through the Erie Canal and into the Great Lakes and down the Mississippi River and so on? And they came along and said, hey, listen, if it's commerce, it's admiralty. That's what the bottom line is. So anytime you're complaining about rules and regulations, traffic court and family court, and et cetera, you're dealing with admiralty, you're dealing with commerce. That's what that's all about. What you've done here when you got a marriage license is that you went into a commercial enterprise with your bride, with the state. So commercial three-party limited general partnership for profit and gain. I don't know why you would want to get into the marriage program with the state in a profit and gain scenario, but for some reason people have decided that that's what they want to do. And after all, you know, people are called sovereign individuals. You know, you people are free, white, and 21, you know. At least a lot of you are. And now I have people in here with college degrees, for crying out loud. Don't understand any of this. Just total Greek to them. They've been to public school, went to college. Had a kid in here the other day, he's making $39 an hour working at Lockheed. $39 an hour. Hell of a nice guy. Just dumb as a box of rocks. Absolutely ignorant. He hadn't got a clue as to which end is up. I mean, in his field and what he does in life, he's top notch. I mean, this guy makes a lot of money. And he's, you know, he's a very knowledgeable guy when it comes to radar. And, I mean, if you want to kill people, this is the guy you want to go to. I mean, this guy can make machines to kill people more cheaply, more efficiently than has ever been done before in history. I mean, this is a technologist. But I mean, when it comes to trade, commerce, business, and industry, when it comes to law and reality, you know, he hadn't got a clue. He just dumbed down like all the rest of the people of America. Now, it's not my fault that you've been dumbed down. You paid for it. I mean, you had to go out of your way to get stupid. It isn't normal. Stupidity isn't normal. It's just common sense, you know, comes into play here. God himself inaugurated into you like a sixth sense, a thing called common sense. Everybody's got a little bit of it. But it's something that needs to be developed, and not too many people are interested in developing it. So let's see if we can do a little better job here. Now, it's interesting that the court should recognize that the waters are public, and those who engage in trade and commerce thereon can be regulated. Regulated, controlled, OSHA, EPA, state tax. They did not address the private use of the public waterways. Let me emphasize that. They did not address the private use of public waterways. By this decision, admiralty was extended to all navigable waters within all of the states. Well, now, there's a private use of these public waterways, too, you know. I mean, you got a public use for trade, commerce, business, and industry, and then you got a private use. What's that private use? Do you have a constitutional right to breathe? Do you have a constitutional right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? And if government takes that, wouldn't that be a takings action? Wouldn't you then go into the state court or federal court on a takings action, taking private property? Now, can a mental patient in a mental hospital take the staff of the mental hospital into court? I don't think so. Could a private party take the state hospital into or the mental hospital into court if they violated his rights? See, when you are a mental patient in a hospital, you have a different relationship than a visitor who comes in on the hospital grounds. Let me give you an illustration. You're a mental patient in the hospital. And the guard over there says, hey, you, get off the grass. Do not walk on the grass. You give him the finger. So he grabs you, puts you in a straitjacket, hauls you in before the administration, and they take away your bread and milk. How's that? All right. Now, I come along, and I'm walking in on the hospital. I came in to visit you, and I'm walking on the grass. And the guard comes over and says, hey, you, get off the grass. You can't walk on the grass. I give him the finger. And I say, kiss off. Is he going to take my bread and milk away from me? No, he's not going to take my bread and milk away from me. The worst thing he can do is deport me. The worst thing he can do is throw me off of the hospital grounds. He doesn't have any power or jurisdiction over me. That's what you do when the Mexican, you know, comes into the United States and he's here illegally. All you can do to him is put him on a bus and ship him back home. Now, of course, if I came onto the hospital grounds over there and I broke the windows and caused a lot of damage and shot and killed people, well, now they got an action against me. It violates the common law to kill people. It violates the admiralty to kill people. So there are some overlapping crimes, you know, killing people and stealing, you know, things like that, that those things are against the law. It violates admiralty and it violates the common law. But don't sit there, you know, send social lady out here and ask me why I'm spanking my kid because he won't mind. You know, assuming that you own the child. Now, of course, you need to understand who it is that owns this child. You know, children with birth certificates are owned by the state. So you got to be careful about how you deal with the state's children. Now, aren't the highways and roads considered public roads and highways? Then, by their own logic, the same reason would justify the same exercise of power on land to all vehicles and cars. In conclusion, admiralty has a criminal jurisdiction, and admiralty is appealed from, whereas a writ of error would be used in a common law proceeding. Jurisdiction depends on the subject matter and is bound only by the nature of the cause and is no longer restricted by the ebb and flow of the tide. And number four, the admiralty jurisdiction includes maritime hypothecations contracts and policies of insurance, interstate commerce, and transportation on land and sea. Now, later, we'll show you that there is no in personam jurisdiction in admiralty unless there is first an in rem jurisdiction, and no one can be forced without stipulation into an in personam appearance in admiralty. All appearances are voluntary. Now, let me cover that for a minute. Now, we got people, you know, that come in here and they say, well, I'm not going to appear in court. I'm not going to make my appearance. Excuse me? You're not going to make your appearance. Why not? Well, because it gives them jurisdiction. Son, they've already got jurisdiction. You see, every court in the land has the jurisdiction, has the capacity, has the power to determine jurisdiction. If you want to challenge jurisdiction, then it's up to you to walk into court and make that challenge. Burden of proof is on you, by the way. So let's suppose, for the sake of argument, that Ranger Rick gives you a traffic ticket, and he hauls you into court. I'm a passenger in your car, and I'm not wearing my seatbelt. Ranger Rick gives me, George Gordon, a ticket for not buckling his seatbelt. Do you know who's going to get burned? You, the driver. You know why? Because you're the sea captain. You're the sea captain. Got that? You can't take George Gordon into a traffic court. I don't have a driver's license. I haven't volunteered into that jurisdiction. But if Ranger Rick gives me a ticket, I can't ignore it. I got to appear in court and make my challenge to the jurisdiction. The judge will say, how do you want to plead? And I'll say, non-assumpsit, by way of confession and avoidance. And he'll say, well, you can't do that in here. I say, well, you most certainly can. I don't have a driver's license and you don't have jurisdiction, so let's talk about jurisdiction first. What? What? You don't have a driver's license? But you were driving a car. No, I was a passenger in a car. Well, who was driving it? That guy over there. And then he'll jump on you. He'll say, well, my God, you know, you're the sea captain. See, the captain of the ship has the responsibility for running the ship, just like the airline pilot. See? The airline pilot is the guy that's in charge of the airplane. So when the seatbelt sign comes on and says, buckle your seatbelt, you buckle your seatbelt. Why? Because the captain will come out there and throw you off the ship if you don't. He's in charge of the ship. In charge of the ship. When he says, you know, all lights out, you know, no smokes. That means there's no smoking during takeoff and landing, remember? Now, you get up in the captain's face, and he'll throw you in the brig. He'll do whatever he needs to do. See, when you buy a ticket on this commercial enterprise over here, there are no rights attendant to that. That's why you're getting raped, robbed, and pillaged when you go into the airports. There are no rights attendant to flying on a commercial airliner. None. So if they want to look up your rectum, they certainly have a right to do that. They're not looking up George Gordon's rectum. I don't fly on commercial airplanes. They can take their airplanes and go to hell in a handbasket. Until they get their head screwed on straight. I got a letter here the other day from Carnival Cruises, and they said, hey, come on down here to Miami. You know, it's right after those four hurricanes. They're a little desperate for business. I mean, this is a hell of a deal. I said, hey, come on down here, and we'll let you ride on our Carnival cruise ship for $199, 3 days for $199. I wrote them a letter back, and I said, hell, you don't need to make any deal to me. I can pay you the regular $600. My problem is I can't get down there to Miami. I can't get on an airplane. I don't have any identification. I'm not state approved. I don't have a state identification card. I don't have a social security number. Well, you people have gotten commerce, you know, to such a degree that you want to regulate and control people. You want to identify all these cattle out here. And I said, I'm not going to be identified. You want my business, then you're going to have to do business like an intelligent businessman. So instead of riding on a Carnival cruise, what I'll do is I'll go out here and I'll hire some fishing boat, some private guy over here, take me out in the ocean. Hey, let's go out here fishing. Let's go do something. Yeah, but you can't ride on Carnival. That's the breaks of the game. I can't ride on Delta either. I can't have a Visa or MasterCard. You know, if you want to participate in commerce, boys and girls, then you take the liabilities that go with it. You want to join the Army to get a free education, you get shot at. You want to ride on a commercial airplane, you bend over and let them look up your ass. And shut up about it. It's the way life is. Now, if you don't want to bend over and let them look up your ass, then tell them to take their airplane, stick it up theirs, and you go out here and fly your own airplane. You know, you go out here and hire your own charter. You want to travel from here to there, figure out how you can get from here to there. See if you're smart enough and a big enough boy or girl that you can figure out how to get from here to there without being raped, robbed, and pillaged by interstate commerce, by the admiralty jurisdiction. That'd be a challenge for you. And that's just the way life works. It's time for us to grow up and get real. Now, this dictatorship that's coming upon us over here isn't coming upon us for no good reason. You know, we signed up for it. If you think that the military is a dictatorship, you're right. And you signed up for it. Let's take a quick look at allodial land over here. People call me and they want to know about allodial land. In England, the common law was derived from feudal tenures in real property as held by a pyramid of proprietors holding their rights from the king or the crown on down the line. The American Revolution destroyed any and all allegiance to the British crown, including the rights of property and land, and all feudal tenures and fees were overthrown. All rights of property and land in the United States became allodial titles in allodial freehold under no lord or overlord whatsoever, not even the authority of the colony or the state. Now, this is the reason why our founding fathers considered that they had made every man a king on his own land. In England, William Pitt summarized the concept of private property under common law this way. He said, the poorest man may, in his cottage, bid defiance to all the forces of the crown. It may be frail, its roof may shake, the wind may blow through it, the storms may enter, the rain may enter. All his forces dare not cross the threshold of this ruined tenement. Unquote. Well, the common law of the states is founded and grounded upon substantive titles in real property, and no mere legislative enactment by Congress or the state legislature, nor judicial ruling by federal or state courts can operate to deprive the people of their rights at law. This includes their rights inherent in their allodial land titles and to the traders at law on a cash basis. Their rights to access to courts at law, common law courts, and to a jurisdiction where their rights are protected. The American Revolution broke the hold of English feudalism over colonial land. and instantly converted all land titles to alludiums. Now, this fact was clearly analyzed by the Supreme Court of the state of Pennsylvania in the case of Wallace versus Harmstead, H-A-R-M-S-T-A-D, in 1863, when the court said, now somebody's going to call me. I don't have the citation on the case, but it's Wallace, W-A-L-L-A-C-E versus Harmstead, H-A-R-M-S-T-A-D, in 1863, and it'll be the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. Look it up on Pine Law. They said in the case, I see no way of solving this question except by determining whether our Pennsylvania titles are allodial or feudal. So it should be stated that there are only two types of land. It's either allodial or it's feudal. All land in America today is feudal land. You don't have allodiums or allodes in this country. We used to, but we threw them away. You know, we Americans decided that God's program of private property and private ownership was bad for us, and so we adopted the first plank to the Communist Manifesto. Feudal land is owned by the king. It's owned by the state and the king. It collects a fee from its tenants and requires all tenants to specifically perform. That's why you pay property tax on your land, boys and girls. It's feudal land. Got that? People are complaining about the high property taxes that they have to pay. Well, it's what you wanted. You see, Americans at one time had allodial land title. And you people said, no, that's no good. We don't want that. We want property tax. I don't know why you Americans decided that. For the life of me, I can't figure out why in the world you would want property tax. Well, government came along and said, well, gee, wouldn't you like to have free public school for all children? And you said, yeah, good. We got to have a property tax. And the government came to you and said, well, wouldn't you like to have roads and highways and all these public benefits? Yeah, we'd like to have those. Curbs and gutters and streets and paved and pavement and sidewalks. We want all of that. Okay, well, you have a property tax. Hey, wouldn't you like to have a sheriff and 911? And wouldn't you like to have an air ambulance and ambulance service? Yeah, we want all that. Good, well, you got to have a property tax. Take a look on your property tax statement. Look at all the things you're buying. Hell, somebody's got to pay for that, you know. And then somebody says, well, you mean we wouldn't have 911? No, you wouldn't have 911. They just put that in here a couple of years ago in Ozark County. People of the county voted it in. They said, yep, we want to indebt our land. We want to pledge our land as collateral for 911. Been living here for 200 years without it and gotten along quite nicely. All of a sudden, we decided we can't live another day without 911 service. Put it on our feudal land owned by the state. Allodial land is held without subjection to any superior. The possession of allodial land exercises an unqualified dominion over the land. In the United States, every estate in fee simple is held in absolutely and unconditionally as in the state's right of eminent domain. Beauvais Law Dictionary, Volume 3, page 3258, 1914. Continuing, the court said, I venture to suggest that much of the confusion of ideas that prevails on this subject has come from our retaining, since the American Revolution, the feudal nomenclature of estates and tenures as fee, freehold, heirs, feoffment, and the like. Our question then narrows itself down to this, is fealty any part of our land tenures? What Pennsylvanian ever obtained his lands by openly and humbly kneeling before his Lord, being ungirt, uncovered, and holding up his hands both together between those of the Lord who sat before him, and there professing that he did become his man from that day forth, for life and limb, and certainly honor, and then receiving a kiss from his Lord? This was the oath of fealty, which was, according to Sir Martin Wright, the essential feudal bond so necessary to the very notion of a feud, F-E-U-D. We are then to regard the Revolution and these acts of assembly as emancipating every acre of soil of Pennsylvania from the grand characteristics of the feudal system, even as to the lands held by the proprietaries, that is, the city of Philadelphia themselves. They held them as other citizens held under the Commonwealth, and that by a title purely allodial. Allodial. The Revolution did emancipate every acre of soil within the United States from the grand characteristics of the feudal system. All lands are allodial and cannot be taken away by the state, nor can the state demand a specific performance, that is, a tax, on the individual possessing the land. The state cannot take allodial land away from us. But we can certainly give that land to the state if we want to, and we did. We did. State came along and said, hey, listen, we got to have these curbs and highways and streets and roads. And people sat down and said, yeah, we want to do that. So they voted it in. That's the benefits of democracy. We can all get together and we can have a lot of other people decide what we ought to do with our private property. So we got zoning and planning, and then we got building permits and building inspectors, and they come around and determine whether or not you're building this land according to the state, that is the king's predetermined zoning requirements. Now, this is called a taking or a takings action, and there's a way for you to use your land. There's a way for you to use your land. It's not easy, and it would have been a hell of a lot easier if we had not given it away. In this country, we used to have a system, and it was called the Land Patent Act of 1820. And under the Land Patent Act of 1820 began the demise of our allodial tenure and title. Congress, very early on, said, you know, we got to get control over this land. It's not good for these peasants out here to own this land out here in allodial freehold. Now, we got this allodial freehold land from Moses. It comes from God, claiming land and then owning it in absolute allodial free title, fee simple title, came from Moses at Mount Sinai. It's protected by thou shalt not steal. And we decided, no, we don't want that. We got to have zoning and planning. We got to have somebody tell us when to get up in the morning, when to go to bed at night, and what to do in between. We got to have a building inspector to tell us how to build. We can't figure that out for ourselves. And we got to have banks to finance it. We can't finance this ourselves. We're too poor. So we went out here and we mortgaged everything that we've got. How many of you people own your land in fee simple? You know, don't all jump up at the same time now. Now, the truth of the matter is you got a mortgage on your land. You are a sharecropper. You got a mortgage, you're a sharecropper. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, there are no allodial tenures or titles left in America, to my knowledge. Now, if you want to get paid for the loss of your land, you've been paid with the benefits that the state provided you with your own money. The state never had any money to build roads, bridges, streets, sewers, gutters that they didn't first get from you. So they came to you and said, well, would you like all these goodies and all these toys like 911? And you said, oh, yes, give us these goods. And then they said, good, pledge your land as security and then give us the tax money to buy it for you. So you give them a dollar, it takes 50 cents to administer it, and you get 50 cents worth of goods. What the hell is this? You got to pay a dollar to get 50 cents worth of goods because you can't go out and spend a dollar and get 100 cents worth of goods for yourself? And then you complain. You complain about these government bureaucrats, you know, running your life and telling you how to live your life and when to come in and when to go out. You sign up for it, and like the prodigal son, you throw your inheritance away, and then you complain about your guardians. What the hell kind of nonsense is this? Well, we're about out of time here, boys and girls. Remember, this is you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and Law Hour, please go to our website, georgecordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure you get one. To order yours, just call the Law School and ask for it. 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967, or go to the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking about the common law. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.